Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of this sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on Mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert for Mushing, and today I am joined by an Iditarod finisher. His name is Joey Sabin, calling in from Fairbanks, Two Rivers, Alaska. Joey, how's it going today?
Good. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. Congrats on your finish. 23rd place. 12 days, 4 hours, 25 minutes, and 55 seconds. What did it feel like out there?
Oh, it was great. I mean, pretty much the whole race really just felt like, you know, a pretty long camping trip with the dogs. You know, we weren't really racing. But yeah, I was just, you know, out there having fun with my best friends and family.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but let's have our listeners learn a little bit about you. Tell us briefly who you are and what you're all about.
Yeah, my name is Joey Sabin. I run a kennel here in Two Rivers, Alaska now with my partner, Willow. We have, 33 dogs? Got 32 sled dogs and a Jack Russell and a cat who thinks she's a dog. We give dog sled rides. We're contracted out, so we work at a couple places, Rod's Alaskan Guide Service, Borealis Base Camp, and then in the summer we run a glacier operation, so we're giving dog sled rides all year long.
And how did you get started in mushing? It's my understanding up north in Minnesota.
So I actually started, I had one gig back in Colorado. I don't necessarily count that.
Okay.
I wasn't really there that long. I was only there for a couple months, if that, and just wasn't the right fit. But after that, I did that next winter, I came up to Fairbanks and worked for Sven Haltman. And he was probably one of my main mentors. And that's when I fell in love. I mean, the guy does it right. The dogs were, you know, phenomenal dog team and phenomenal musher and great mentor. And I just fell in love with the sport. And then Minnesota kind of happened right after that. I was at Spence for about 2 years. And then I kind of got stuck in Minnesota because of COVID. So I figured, why not get dogs?
There you go.
So that's where I get my own dogs back in northern Minnesota. But the plan was always to come back up here. I mean, I wanted to, you know, play with the big boys up in Fairbanks and race competitively. So we finally made the move back up here 3 years ago.
And with the early entry there to dog mushing, was that on a glacier or somewhere else?
The first early one was in Colorado, in Snowmass, Aspen area. Again, I was there for, 2 months, and it just wasn't a good fit.
Yep.
And then after that, I went to Sven's, and then I didn't know what a glacier was. I had no idea what a glacier was until I worked for Sven's. Sven's like, hey, what are you doing this summer? I'm like, I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet. He's like, you're bringing my dog to the glacier. I'm like, okay, what's the glacier?
Okay. Well, let's talk about that, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners have no idea what that's about either. You know, most of them are familiar really just by following on social media and things. Some of them go on tours, like on a cruise ship or something, but what is life like for a dog musher living on a glacier in the summer?
I'm just going to be my sixth season. However, I worked for Alaska Icefield Expeditions for years. And it's a great operation. I was a musher up there. But the operation we have now, that we run ourselves is pretty laid back. It's really nice. You know, you're on the glacier for 6 days and you get 3 days off. But yeah, pretty much your commute to work is helicopter. So we're up in the ice field up in the mountains where there's still tons of snow. It's pretty nice. Yeah. It's just, this operation, 6 days on, 3 days off. Other operations I work for, I mean, sometimes you're lucky to get 24 hours off.
Yeah.
But the 3 days off thing is actually almost too much. We'll be on the ground and we're like, okay, I've done everything I needed to do. Let's go back to work.
Right.
again, because this is a pretty laid back operation. It's just my partner Willow and I's dogs. So we only have 30 dogs up on the glacier. Yeah, very laid back. It's only the second year we've been doing it, so we are growing. And we do hope to grow to the point where, you know, we could have a little bit bigger staff of maybe 5 to 7 people. Right now our staff's only 3 people. Yeah, it's really laid back. We actually we're gonna get your own little place to live. You know, we have these own our own little huts that we can stay in. Obviously my partner and I share one, and then we have a separate hut for our employee. So we all have our own space. It's just, you just get to hang out with dogs. I mean, it's awesome.
That's
nothing better than being able to, and all our dogs too are pretty much free running dogs. Obviously for their safety, we have them on, you know, chains during tours and whatnot, but you know, if we're outside grilling cheeseburgers or hot dogs and having fun, you know, you got 20 plus dogs running around having fun too. So.
Yeah. And it's not like they can get lost up there, right?
I mean, I bet they could, but our dogs, they know better to take off.
Okay.
Now at home, you know, you got a couple oldies that you might not see for a couple days, but they'll be back.
Right. So let's switch gears a little bit here, Joey, and talk about Iditarod. I guess my first question, just sort of leading up to that, is you've had this experience working with Sven and having your own deal and all that. What caught the Iditarod bug? Was that always in the plans?
I guess not. I mean, definitely being a dog musher was. You know, growing up, my favorite movie was Iron Will. I think before I even knew what dog mushing was, I had my pet dogs pull me on my rollerblade, skateboard, bicycle, you name it. I was always out with my pet dogs. I mean, I had this one dog, Alex, and we went everywhere together. And literally, I was a year old when we got her. We spent the first 13 years of my life together. I think it was, I definitely followed the, in fourth grade, we did a project on the Iditarod, which definitely piqued my interest. But gotta say, my mom's best friend, who's like my favorite aunt to me, my Aunt Shelley, she was a big Iditarod fan. And she definitely kind of encouraged me to, you know, that'd be a perfect thing for you to do is run, you know, be a dog musher.
Okay.
It was always kind of the back of my head. And then in college, you know, I was trying to go to school to be a veterinarian and organic chemistry. I had other plans for me. So I was like, let's do something different. I think Iditarod didn't really have, I didn't think I wanted to do Iditarod until I actually got into dogs. So I think, you know, that first year working for Sven, I was like, oh, I want to run the Iditarod. and that was almost 10 years ago now. So, but I also wanted to do it with my own dogs. I definitely feel like if I would have stayed at Sven's or even if I went to another musher and worked a couple years and I could have ran their dogs, you know, I kind of wanted to do it with my own dogs. I wanted to raise my own dogs. And I mean, there was only one dog on this team that I did not raise.
Interesting. So here you go. You're getting ready to head down to do the ceremonial start and, of course, the restart and all of that. You know, excitement is pumping. You hit the trail. After all of that work, like you said, almost 10 years to get you to this point, tell us about the race itself. You said at the beginning it was just sort of like a laid-back camping trip. Was that truly what it was there over the next 12 days or so?
I mean, the whole, obviously, you know, it's funny because, like, I had this real detailed plan, going into this race, and 40 miles in, I had to throw that plan out the window. It wasn't, I planned on kind of actually racing a little bit, but we had some issues. You know, the dogs got a little bug, and then we had some orthopedic issues in the beginning, and so pretty early on, you know, I'm like, you know what? I think what's best for my team is let's take a little bit extra rest. Let's, you know, and with that rest, let's do a lot more massage and, you know, definitely tender to the dogs a little bit more. It ended up pretty early on turning into just one big long camping trip with my friends, you know, which was all right. We finished with 12 strong dogs and I couldn't be more happier.
I don't know if you know this, but we do a nightly podcast during the Iditarod, and of course we're following along with all of you guys on Insider and, you know, talking about the day's race and all that. And I remember talking about just about that point where you slowed down a little bit and took a little bit of a slower pace. When you say that you had to throw your plan out, for folks that are listening, what does that mean? Did you have everything sort of laid out, like you're going to run this many miles or do this much rest, you know, per day, or what did that look like for you?
So pretty much, I mean, I was going to run, I would say, a pretty competitive schedule, especially for a rookie. My plan was to really honestly do like a 4-4-6 rest run ratio. I mean, pretty much I'd be doing, you know, 6 hour run with only a 4 hour rest, 6 hour run with only a 4 hour rest, and then another 5-6 hour run with a 6 hour rest. And kind of repeat that. But yeah, early on, I felt that that wasn't going to work this race. And I was fine with that, you know, with a rookie run. But with that being said too, you kind of want to bank rest early on. I mean, you look at Jeff Dieter, he took quite a bit of rest and got third place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, talking to a couple of their mushers too, it's like a extra rest does equal speed. So yeah, I kind of just looked at what my dogs needed and gave them what they needed. And I could have definitely probably shortened rest, especially later in the race. But at that point, you know, we were just having fun and I wanted to continue having fun. I don't want to push anything that I didn't have to. So we continued with doing pretty much equal run, equal rest. And so if I ran 6 hours, I rested for 6 hours. If I ran for 5 hours, I rested for 5 hours. And I think that definitely was the best way to do it. And we had, again, 12 strong, healthy dogs that could have kept going at the finish line.
And were you part of the crew that got holed up in White Mountain for a day and a half?
Yeah, the White Mountain 9, I was there.
Yes. I know we have a couple of other people sort of in that same boat as you. What was that like? Obviously, that throws everything off in terms of schedule. You were there, what was that, three times as long as you were supposed to be with an 8 hour rest.
30 hours I was there for. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of whatever, really. At that point in the race, you know, I was, you know, kind of traveling the back of the pack for the most part for most of the race. And I feel like a lot of us I had pretty close friends. I mean, I definitely knew a couple of the guys in the back of the pack with me, but yeah, hanging on White Mountain is definitely, I got a lot of sleep. Dogs got a lot of rest. Way too much rest. My dogs were literally, and again, we trained to be a little bit more competitive. And then I bring my dogs to this race where they have the whole entire race. They had so much rest. And then we get to White Mountain and you're going to throw on another 30 hours of rest. My dogs were going insane. I think Richie Beattie was like, dude, you should probably take your dogs for a lap. They're out there going like nuts. I'm just like, yeah, they're not used to this much rest, which is good. I mean, that means I had a very well-trained team that they didn't need that rest. But I didn't mind it. I mean, I took a shower. I was ready to come into Nome all clean. I was smelling good.
Very good.
For me, it was pretty good.
So obviously at that point, 77 miles or so to the finish, of course, anything can happen in those last little bit, but you knew at that point that Nome was in your sights. Tell us about the finish. It has to be a special experience. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a cloud nine experience. I've been working for this for a long time. And obviously even with the fact that things didn't go the way I want them to, like it was still one of the best feelings in the world crossing that finish line. Something I've been, something I've been chasing since I got into the sport. And being able to cross that finish line and have all my really good friends also there. You know, my girlfriend, obviously Willow was, you know, the first one that I got a hug. One of my best friends, Chelsea, she was in the top 20. She was up there with her husband, JJ, and we had Matt Hall up there, and Jeff Dieter was there. My buddy, Laura, was there. Like, obviously, all these competitors. you know, Jesse Holmes comes up and gives me a big hug. I mean, it was amazing. It felt great that all the people I competed against also were there to support me. They're all people I hang out with all the time too, you know, as their friends and family.
And you finished at a respectable time, not in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. So I'm sure the residents and the visitors of Nome had a chance to get out there and cheer you on as well coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool. Coming up along the coast, there was tons of people out cheering, congratulating me, high fiving me. I mean, it was probably good. That last, 2 miles was people just, you know, cheering, and yeah, you know, it felt great. I mean, definitely, like I said, cloud 9 moment. And I was definitely on cloud 9 for quite a while. And yeah, we've worked really hard for that. And I'm glad I'm glad we finished with 12 strong dogs. A couple of dogs that I dropped, you never expect to drop a dog, right? And you know what's going to happen. A couple of them I dropped, one was really precautionary, and another one was just, something was off. And then another one was just, he was a puppy. I didn't want to push him through all that. And he did great for the 200 miles he did.
So let's talk about the checkpoints, Joey. Aside from White Mountain, where you just literally kick back and have a mini vacation there, shower and all that, yeah. What was your favorite checkpoint along the trail?
Favorite checkpoint? I'd have to say Ophir. Ophir would probably be my favorite checkpoint. That was the place I wanted to take a 24, but we ended up taking our 24 McGrath, which McGrath was great. Ophir is just, it was so nice. It's just, kind of more of a remote checkpoint, and everyone there is just laid back. You know, I only was there for 6 hours, I think, and I wish I would have stayed longer, but we had to keep moving. We literally just got off our 24, so the dogs again were going crazy. Definitely good vibes in Ophir. Liked it a lot.
Okay. So let's talk about one of your dogs. Share a story or two. Doesn't have to be a lead dog. Who really shined for you on this race?
So Gasket. Gasket's probably the best story I got out of any of the Dogland team. So Gasket's a dog that actually I did not raise. I got him from the Wallen family back when I first got into dogs. It's a mushroom family in Minnesota. And I don't know. I had him for probably, a year or two? Not even. And he just, didn't seem like he wanted to be a sled dog. So I'm like, and I don't make my dogs do this. So I'm like, all right, cool. You don't want to be a sled dog, come hang out with me inside. So he became a couch dog pretty much after a year of having him. Just lived inside. And that was, 4 or 5 years ago? And he's just been living inside, doing a tour here and there. Never really made him do anything. Like we open the door every single morning. And if Gasket stays on the couch, that means he stays home. If he jumps in the truck, okay, that means he wants to go to work. We let him choose. But this year it was like, what's going on? He wants to go to work every single day. He wants to run every single day. And the dog has this perfect trot. I mean, just this flawless. I mean, doesn't matter how fast you're going, the dog is perfect little trot. He ended up, I'm like, all right, well, let's plug him in with the race team, see how he does. And sure enough, just trotting along. We go 12 miles an hour, he's trotting along. We go 9 miles an hour, he's trotting along, and just looking beautiful. So I'm like, holy crap, we'll take him to the Copper Basin, see how he does in the 300-mile race, and he did fantastic. So I'm like, all right, he made the Iditarod team, bud. And this dog finishes the Iditarod, and he's been living on the couch for the last 4 or 5 years.
Wow. Yeah, that's a cool story. I guess it's sort of like those guys that, lay around, eat potato chips, and the next thing you know, they sign up for a marathon and they go out and run one and get the medal and all that.
Yeah, no, that's Gasket 100%. It's not that kind of like me when I was in my early 20s. I can't do this anymore, but yeah, my parents or my friends would come knocking on my door. Hey, dude, we're going to go run a marathon today. I'm like, I haven't trained for a marathon. I don't know. Okay, let's go do it. And we do it.
So I was looking on your at your website, and I love the dog names you have there. I think you have the energy drink crew and the and the Game of Thrones and all that. When you're naming puppies, how does it come up in the rotation? Is it just something that catches your idea there, or like the Game of Thrones crew? Was that sort of when that show was on?
It's the Game of Thrones crew. So they are actually named after all the bastards in Game of Thrones, because I don't know who the dad is.
Okay.
So I bought Tuki, which I still have her today. I bought Tuki. She was either already pregnant when I got her, or she got pregnant real quick when I got her. So we're not exactly sure who the dad is. So I was like, that's a perfect theme. Yeah, and then the energy drink litter is my first litter, and I love energy drinks, so that fit pretty well. But right now, we're at the point now that my partner and I, we've been together for 3 years, so we alternate. So she gets to name a litter, I get to name a litter. So I'm up next. So I have quite a cool themes. I don't want to say all of them because I don't want other mushers to steal them from me.
You got to hold your cards close to the vest.
Yeah, right. So I definitely have some pretty... One I always want to do is the friends litter, because I'm Joey, and then we can have like Phoebe, Rachel, and blah 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 blah. We don't need a Joey, because I'm already Joey. So I always want to do that one if it ever works out. And then I got a couple other good ones. So, but yeah, I get this next one, and then once the Lions win the Super Bowl, that's gonna trump everything, because we get a Lions litter, but. They have to win the Super Bowl before I do a Lions litter.
I like that. And maybe we'll have a Campbell and a.
Definitely have to have a Campbell. Yeah.
Yeah. And that will be the coach of the crew, I guess.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. The most dominant one is going to be Dan Campbell.
There you go. So, Joey, let's talk a little bit about the future. Like we said earlier, a lot led up to this. You've done quite a few qualifiers. Here you are up in Alaska doing your own thing. What's next?
We're going to hopefully run the Iditarod every year. I have no plans on not running it. But we definitely want to do some other races too. We got some breedings planned for this year. So definitely, I think the main focus again, obviously next year we're going to do Copper again. We'll probably have two teams in the Copper, two teams in the 2/200, and then one team, myself, will be on the Iditarod, and then Willow will most likely do the Kobuk 440.
Okay.
That'll be next year's. That's next year's plan as of now, and that obviously could change. Then I got a couple litters that I have planned, and then eventually we do plan on doing Cusco, but I want to definitely get a team trained for that. I'd like to do a separate team for Cusco, train them a little bit faster. Definitely Cusco's in the books the next couple years. I think next year that's gonna be next year plan. Both do Copper, Will and I both do 2/200. As long as the 2/200 is the same time as it was this year, because it lines up perfect. It's like you do the Copper and then you have a week off, and then do the 2/200, and then you have a month and a half off, and I did it out. I feel like that's like a perfect thing for the dogs.
I know they've switched that one around a little bit. Sometimes it's in March. Iditarod, and then here we are this year.
It's either after Iditarod, or it's like last couple of years it was Valentine's Day, but this year it was like a week after Copper, which would line up perfect for what we want to do. And if not, then I don't know. Willow talked. She thinks it'd be really cool to go do the Sioux Dog. It looks like a really fun race, so we might do that instead of one of them.
Okay.
We love what we do. We love racing, and we want to do all the races. I mean, there's not that many 300-mile races anymore, so we want to try to hit all of them if we can.
Yeah, they're fewer and far between, for sure. So, Joey, I have some questions here I ask all of my guests. I kind of told you what they were before we hit record. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it. The first one is, what is your favorite song or artist?
So, on the trail, I actually don't listen to music, and everyone thinks I'm crazy.
Okay.
I like the peace and quiet, just my dogs and me. But if I do have tunes on, it's usually Michael Jackson.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think anybody has ever said that. Do you have a favorite song of his?
Oh, I don't know. I do not have a favorite song. I mean, I guess the Thriller album would be my favorite.
There you go. That's a good one for sure. Pop that bad boy on for an hour and you're ready to rock and roll. Okay. Next up is a piece of gear. Doesn't necessarily have to be mushing, that you always have with you other than your phone.
My sweater. I mean, pretty much every single time, every race at least, I will have my girlfriend knitting me this sweater, and I mean, it goes to every race with me, and it's nice and warm.
Oh, I like that. A lot of people are running around with the mushing sweaters these days. Yeah. Is it similar?
Yep. She did. Yes, it's the same pattern as a lot of them. But yeah, she knitted that for me a couple years ago, and it's kind of stretched out now, which is fine. It's actually, I usually put it over my, my puffy coat. I think it's time for her to make me a new one.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but several years ago, Dallas Seavey had one of those sweaters, and he had its own Twitter account during Iditarod. And it got all kinds of traffic. You know, it was tweeting for itself on there because it was in every picture when he would pull into a checkpoint. I think he probably won that year. But those things got very popular at about that same time.
It's funny, like these wool sweaters. Like when I remember when I was a kid, if my parents tried to put a wool sweater on me, I would freak out. And now it's all I wear. Like I'm always wearing wool.
Hey, I'm in the same boat too. If it's too scratchy, I don't want it. So that's definitely a first here on the podcast, somebody to say that. Okay. Up next, Joey, is a two-parter. What is your favorite trail meal or snack? And then if you're on a road trip, heading to a race or whatever, what are you picking up at the gas station?
Yeah. So favorite trail snack or meal. Usually it's Uncrustables.
Okay.
Last few races I'd live on Uncrustables, but this race was actually cheese sticks. I don't know what it was, but I sent out tons of string cheese sticks and they were amazing. They put them in your pocket and they're thawed out within a couple minutes and good to go. Any road trip I go on, I'm usually picking up Sour Punch Bite straws or Sour Punch Bites or straws.
Okay. All right. And you said you're an energy drink fan. What is your favorite?
Oh, Red Bull by far. Red Bull is my favorite.
Okay.
Every now and then I'll do a Bang, but Red Bull is my jam.
Have you tried the new cherry flavor yet?
I have not. I saw in the gas station the other day, the spring edition.
Pretty tasty.
Yeah. No, I like the watermelon is one of my favorites. Yeah, I've not tried the new one yet.
All right.
We'll probably go get that tomorrow.
There you go. So we're going to end here with if you have anybody to thank, whether it be family, friends, or sponsors, and then let people know how they can follow you, whether you're on socials or website, whatever.
Yeah. Definitely want to thank, obviously, my partner, Willow. She's definitely... you know, my rock and has done so much helping train the dogs and doing for this race, doing a lot of logistics and she rocked it. And then obviously all my friends and family that help support, a lot of our dog sponsors come from friends and family. And then obviously every now and then we get one from someone that we give a dog sled ride to. So, and that all that money that we got from dog sponsors went straight to dog booties. And I feel like that probably covered about half the cost of dog booties, which helps out a lot. And then our main sponsors, we got Alaska Helicopter Tours, Racing Chaos, and then we got Cultro. We got Bailey from Cultro. He's does our website, Richard Bailey, and his wife. They're awesome, dealing with our website all the time. And then Humankind, which is a counseling company that one of my really good friends back in Michigan runs, Chelsea and her husband Tyler. So, They've all helped me get here, and we're happy. I mean, obviously, I want to thank some of my workers, people I work for, obviously Racing Chaos, Dave Turner, and then Rod's Alaskan Guide Service for, you know, keeping us fed.
Okay. And where can folks follow you and ask questions, all that?
So our Facebook page, we are pretty active on Facebook this year. It's Voyager Outdoor Adventures is the Facebook page. And then voaracing.com is our website.
All right, guys, we'll put all those links on the show notes page. Joey, I appreciate your time today. Again, congrats on the Iditarod finish. We'll talk again soon, okay?
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf of my guest today, Joey Sabin, this is Robert for the Mushing Podcast. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.